So tonight we're looking at Matthew chapter 5, verses 33 through 37. And we're talking about the subject of swearing, forswearing thyself. And not in the sense of using bad language, although that's oftentimes the way that it's used, these verses, for those of a more practical sense, because that's what we hear more than perhaps one making a solemn oath. But these verses aren't talking about just the use of bad language or cussing, as maybe we might phrase it. This is talking about actually taking an oath, swearing an oath in this way. And Jesus addresses his hearers on what they are to do about this in these verses. So we're going to start with Matt Kuderna. Question number one, what is the Old Testament principle that Jesus is referring to regarding forswearing thyself that we find in verse 33, which says, again, ye have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths.
Well, the 1611 special that you just read from uses the word forswearing. The New King James uses swear falsely. Others use the more common American term perjure. They all mean the same thing. You can't say that you are going to do something or that you have maybe done something and then that turn out to be not true. That's the principle here, and it comes from several places in the Old Testament, namely Leviticus 19:12, where it says, And you shall not swear by my name falsely, that's God's name, in the name of God, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. And then Numbers 30, and then verse 2 also says, if a man makes a vow to the Lord, or swears an oath to bind himself by some agreement, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. And this is not to say that it's okay to lie so long as you do not make an oath to God before you do it. Remember, the ninth commandment is you should not bear false witness. And then to compound on this oath, I think the third commandment is you shall not take the Lord's name in vain. Mm-hmm. So if you bear false witness, you lie, and then do that under oath, you've broken two already of the Ten Commandments. And from what I can tell from the commentators, I admittedly did not dig very deep on this, but I wasn't able to find any of these rabbinical pieces of literature that they talk about saying that the Jews of this time had taken liberties with swearing oaths. Mm-hmm. And they had said, so long as you don't swear on the name of God, if you swear on something else, then that is not binding. And if you choose to go back on that or you don't follow through on that, then that's not really a problem because you did not swear your oath to the Lord like it says to do in the law of Moses. And what Jesus is going to say here, we'll get into it more. He's saying, no, the law of Moses says you're not supposed to lie at all. And when you break that oath, you're breaking two of the Ten Commandments, but even if you make your oath on something else, you still can't lie.
Very good. That's exactly the point that he's trying to drive home, not only here, but in other verses that we'll look at a little bit later on. Any further comments on question number one? Okay.
That's awesome. I think it's important to point out in Leviticus 19, verse 12 that Matt cited, and you shall not swear by my name falsely. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't do it falsely.
Right.
We know we're going to see multiple examples of people taking oaths, and very, a very common process. You just can't do it falsely.
Correct. Okay, so question number two. Is there a difference between swearing, being under oath, and making a promise? As we talk about verse 34, and we will give this question to Grant.
All right. I think it might be easier actually to start with the third one there, and actually talk about the promise. any of the process that you make a declaration to actually do something. There's the kind of implication that you will do all your efforts to fulfill that, what you just said you're going to do. And then the idea of the swearing is you make this promise, but you kind of make it in references, including God's name into it, or God, or the being of God, or the existence of God, like with God as my witness, or in that kind of context. And then I kind of got the idea, and that's also usually to a promise to tell the truth. You swear that something will happen. And then the oath is a promise to do something, as opposed to something to say something. Again, with the idea of a promise before God to do something. Kind of in the whole context of this question, there also might be a good idea to go over the word affirm, since we often hear this in legal contexts, instead of swearing to tell the truth, we affirm to tell the truth. The idea there is also a promise to tell the truth, but without the implication of involving God in that.
Right.
Which is an important thing to remember in our current society.
Mm-hmm.
Other words kind of fall in this category, vow and pledge. Also, the idea of making a promise before God to do something. But the vow is a little bit different in the sense that, the way I understand it, vow is a little bit different in the sense that you're making this promise before God, but not necessarily the swearing aspect of it. It's not according to God. But it kind of is. That's a little bit different, I think. A pledge is kind of like put something, have an object that you, that if the promise is broken, that it is taken as a payment for breaking the promise.
Very good. Those are all important concepts to remember when you're talking about this particular subject, that there are different degrees of, if you will, of making, whether it starts with a promise, a vow, a pledge, an oath, or swearing. To me, when I was looking at it, swearing and an oath were very similar, almost synonyms, but an oath was a little bit more serious, if you will. But yes, all very, very good things to remember. Anyone want to add further to those thoughts? Mark?
Well, I'm not sure about technically. You know, you might try and make an argument that swearing in court has legal significance that a vow doesn't. But then I thought about that a little bit, and that's not true. You know, if you swear in court and then you violate that, you know, you're found to be guilty, then you could be found in contempt of the court and fined or whatever. But it's also true about a vow. When you make a vow when you're standing before, you know, the preacher to get married, and you make a vow to be faithful, and then later, if that is found not to be true, then you can be found financially liable, at least in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I would assume it's still, in some courts, that's still true, that if you were the one who has committed adultery and you're found to have broken your vows, then the judge may make a financial decision in favor of the other person, give them, you know, however that works. So there is a legal precedent to a vow as well. And then now promise, difficult, obviously, it's not a legally recorded item, but what we, and when we studied this together, and I completely agree with everything Grant said, but we have to remember that it was Linsky that said, a Christian, let's see if I can find the quote here. Linsky said that a Christian needs to remember that you're always standing in the presence of God. And regardless of where you are or what you're doing, God is recording what you're saying with your lips. And so it's, significantly, there's really no difference between, there might be in the eyes of men, but between swearing an oath and a promise, there's no difference because you're always in the presence of God. And your words are being recorded and remembered by the Almighty. And you are held, regardless of whether or not you're in a court of law or anywhere you are held to account for those things. So I think while we may debate about the technicalities and maybe somebody else has a different opinion about it, I think what Jesus is trying to say, as we'll get to later, is they're the same.
Mm-hmm.
When you say something as a Christian, then it, you know, it stands. So I would contend that there isn't a difference between the three.
And honestly, that likewise is a good point, because you can get into the technicalities of it, like you said, And there is some technical differences. There's some maybe some differences as far as the judicial system is concerned. But when it comes down to it and boils down to it, and that's what Jesus is trying to drive home here, it doesn't matter what technicality you might attach to it, because they're all equally important to fulfill if you're giving your word, in whatever form that might take. Very good. Any other comments on that? All right. We're going to go to question number 3. We're just kind of blowing through these tonight, which is good. That means some good study's been done. Trace, question number 3. Why does mankind employ the use of oaths, and why should God's people not have to swear?
Well, it's a good question. I think in some way, shape, or form, these have been answered, but as we've discussed, an oath is... it's somewhat more important. And so when somebody makes an oath to someone else, you know, they try to make it more serious. They try to make to give it a little more insurance for that person that it'll be accomplished. But given circumstances and everything, lots of times, unfortunately, people aren't able to follow through. And so that falls to the next question. We as Christians should never make an oath or a false promise that we know we can't accomplish, or we really shouldn't try to make any promises. I don't think it's kind of dangerous grounds, because you know, we're to be honest. We're to be a people of honesty, and when you do that, you're taking a chance. It's taking a gamble of if you can do it or not. And it's just unsafe territory. Like Matt read earlier in Deuteronomy, in the book of Leviticus 19:12, it says, "And you shall not swear by my name falsely, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord." And, you know, right before that, verse 11, it says, "You shall not steal, nor deal falsely, nor lie to one another." So that's the context it's kind of close to. So really, I mean, the ultimate bottom line of this whole section, I think, is we're to be a people of honesty. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessary to make oaths.
Right. Lauren?
I think the reason that mankind uses oaths is because there is the assumption that you're going to lie, that you're going to cheat, and not tell the truth. I mean, that's why we have the little boxes on your software, because they're assuming that you're going to copy it or you're going to send it to somebody who shouldn't have it. So I think that's the reason, because there's always the assumption that you're going to lie. And for the second part, why should God's people not have to swear, is because people should assume that we're not going to lie as God's people, because John 8:44 says, "The devil is the father of the lie." We don't want to be children of the devil. Colossians 3:9, lying is the activity of an unconverted person.
Very good. Very good. Dennis.
You know, I was thinking about Peter being kind of an example of that when he was in the courtyard. Swearing many times shows a serious character flaw in regarding the person's truthfulness or trustworthiness. And it's so disingenuous that the person must invoke someone or something greater than themselves to kind of bolster what's about to come out of their mouth. And, you know, Peter, in verse 72 of Matthew 26, he denied it with an oath. That's the digression here. I do not know the man. He works on down to 74. Then he began to curse and swear, saying, "I do not know the man." And he's lying, but he wants you to believe that he's not.
Right. And that's a good passage to bring up, because I've heard it said by brethren that may not have studied this out as fully as it probably deserves, that they'll look at that and say he was cussing up a storm. He was acting in a way that was unbefitting of anyone who claimed to be a follower of God. But he wasn't there saying, blankety blank blank. He was calling down curses. Like you said, he was outright lying because he was calling out curses upon himself and calling on, I would assume, God's name even, that he was telling the truth and that he was to be cursed if that wasn't the case. And obviously that was an outright lie. So I appreciate you bringing that up. Matt.
Let's not forget that God also implemented oaths. He saw the need to have oaths for his people thousands of years. The Jewish people swore oaths to God. And 1 Timothy chapter 1, Paul says that the law is good for those who use it lawfully. And there was nothing wrong with anything that was in the law of Moses. What was wrong was the people that were using it. And these oaths that were implemented were not, it wasn't a problem that people were able to swear their oaths to God. The problem was that they were breaking some other commandments when they would swear some oaths. Mm-hmm. Is that the only time that they would swear an oath is when they would tell the truth. Now, that wasn't the problem. The oath was not the problem. The problem was that they had to have it to tell the truth. So mm-hmm. What God says is why. So we'll just get rid of that whole thing and then just tell the truth anyway. And if you can't do that, then there's a deeper problem, which is what Jesus is getting at the whole time here.
Right. And you know, these verses, we keep bringing up the word honesty and lying and how that's not characteristic of one who's a follower of God. This is the groundwork, the fundamental basis upon which one can even profess that he's following God, is that you have to have some sense of morality in your life, that your word has to mean something, that you mean what you say, that you're not going to double cross, you're not going to cheat or lie, and even further than that, that you're not going to blaspheme the one that you claim to serve by invoking his name to something that you have no intention of keeping. So all of these things really that we've noticed in this chapter, it starts out with murder, basic fundamentals. Talks about adultery, again, a basic fundamental of society. Talks about the family and the divorce that might occur in that situation. Now we're on to honesty, really, and that of forswearing thyself. And then throughout the rest of this chapter, basic fundamentals. And for some reason, this is stuff that we have trouble with sometimes. And that really is said kind of to our disappointment in this. That these are issues that give us a lot of grief. And that maybe we don't even treat them with the type of respect that they need. Any further comments on this particular question? All right. Question number 4 for Lauren. What are the similarities between what Jesus preaches here and his rebuke to the scribes and Pharisees in Matthew chapter 23, verses 16 through 22?
Matthew 23, 16 through 22 says, "Woe to you, blind guides, you say, whoever swears by the temple, it is nothing. But whoever swears by the gold of the temple, he is obliged to perform it. Fools and blind, but which is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifies the gold? And whoever swears by the altar, it is nothing, but whoever swears by the gift that is on it, he is obliged to perform it. Fools and blind, for which is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifies the gift? Therefore, he who swears by the altar swears by all things on it. He who swears by the temple swears by it and by him who dwells in it. And he who swears by heaven swears by the throne of God and by him who sits on it." So verse 34 and that last verse there are very similar, stating that swearing by heaven is swearing by God's throne and therefore swearing by God. In both cases, Jesus is addressing a tactic of swearing by something and then claiming the oath was of no value because of a technicality of what it was sworn on. It was dishonesty through trickery. You know, it's inserting a clause into the fine print. The point of verse 37 is, as we've already talked about, be honest, let your yes be yes, and your no, no. Deceit is from the devil.
Very good. Anyone else want to add to that? No.
And this text in chapter 5 includes that phrase that we've seen many times, you have heard it said. But that phrase takes Jesus' audience back to the original verse 34 there, and then he's expanding it for the audience. The idea that this might have included, I found that when I got to thinking about the passage that Lauren covered in chapter 23, you know, thinking about the scribes and the Pharisees, he was rebuking them pretty hard. And I found myself then when going back and looking at this passage again, there's a possibility some of those same Pharisees and scribes and Pharisees would have been part of this same group. I think, you know, if that's the case, you know, the impact that would have had on them should have been pretty powerful.
You would think. But whether it doesn't seem to have stuck in the long term, perhaps given, or maybe that, you know, all of them weren't there, but you would think. Matt, I think you had anything.
Again, these were cited as examples that people in this time would use to swear by. Again, commentators pretty much unanimously seem to think that these were common amongst the Jews of this time, and that these were phrases that they would use because it's not God that you're swearing on. You're swearing on something that's temporal, something that's here on this earth. And the point that Jesus is making here is that everything belongs to God. Whether you're swearing on his name or not, you're swearing on something that God has created, that belongs to him, that has some kind of special place in the plan of God. So if you're going to swear on these things, you better not lie about it like you have been. And it's better that you just don't at all.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Anyone else? Mark? No. I might add too that he does give these as examples, and I, like you, Matt, I didn't actually go and look for the specific literature that pointed to what they said. I thought Jesus' examples were sufficient for the topic at hand, but when you're making, I think we get into dangerous territory when we start making oaths on anything else besides God, on any other entity that doesn't have authority, that has no authority. And I think that's what he tries to point out here in verses 35 and 36, nor by earth, for it's his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it's the city of the great king. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. You don't have any control over that any more than you have control over the earth. God's the one who has control over the earth. The earth itself would be nothing without God. So you're pointing and you're calling down an entity, as an oath is, on something that has no power, no authority. So I think it's... We should be very careful when we start using any other entity other than the Lord to make any type of affirmation upon. That's kind of where I fall on it. Y'all may have other thoughts, but I think that's probably the safest. But safe isn't always correct. So, Bill?
Again, think about what Lauren had said, that this swearing and oath-taking was probably a result of people not being truthful. Mm-hmm. So then what happens with the people that aren't being truthful, if you know, to see it, I don't know that I've ever seen someone swear an oath in public, but you know, you see that kind of stuff on TV. What do? They get louder and bolder, and they're trying to show how important, they're trying to impress.
Yeah.
And so, you got people that can't be trusted, and now people trying to show how you can trust me, And it all goes back to the only way scriptural was back in, what was that? That was Deuteronomy 6:13, mm-hmm. You know, with the Lord's name. That's mm-hmm. the only kind of oath taking you can do.
Yep. Any further comments on that? Okay, so Malan, it's kind of anticlimactic because I feel like we've already said exactly what the answer to this is, and really, questions 5 and 6 kind of go hand in hand. I realized that when I was actually studying through them. But for question number 5, and then if it rolls into question number 6, so be it. Is it wrong to speak any kind of oath?
Well, as we've kind of talked about, it's risky, you know, and so, mm-hmm. I mean, I personally wouldn't feel comfortable taking an oath. I mean, we can look at James chapter 5, verse 12, and that says, but above all, my brethren, do not swear, either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, lest you fall into judgment. And it's kind of like we've already talked about, we certainly don't want to make an oath and then can't keep it, and that would be like a double sin for us. I was just thinking of, you know, like jobs, maybe where you have to take an oath. I don't think doctors necessarily, there's a Hippocratic oath, but I don't think they officially have to do that. But a lot of politicians, you know, have to take an oath of office,
right.
Things like that. And so, but I guess maybe it was more common back then, as we've kind of alluded to, and it'd be important to see how, if someone was trustworthy, things to gauge on. Mm-hmm. Main thing is don't take an oath. That's what I would say.
Okay. Anyone else have a comment on that? Laura? Sorry. We'll get to you, Matt, after.
I think I'm going to say the answer is no. Because marriage is an oath. It's sealed by God. Matthew 19:6. What God has joined, let no man separate.
Right.
So there is precedent there. I think a lot of it is the point not to swear by things. And again, there is, as Matt pointed out, there's examples in the Old Testament that oaths are commanded of people in the Old Testament. But we shouldn't swear by things that we can't affect. We shouldn't use profanes the swear or the one sworn on. We shouldn't swear lightly or flippantly. Here we have this example of cannot make one hair white or black. In contrast, marriage is a little different than that. You have two people working together to make the marriage work, you know, throughout their lives. So it is, they're working to make that oath come to fruition, I guess would be the right word. And then we also have business contracts, which they're oaths, they're not necessarily sworn on by, you know, a higher entity. Mm-hmm. And then even that, as you were talking about a second ago, I think we'd have to think about that in detail, because like when you take out a loan, you're essentially, when you have collateral out there, it is, using that to secure your whatever you're borrowing against.
Right. And this is where, kind of like Bart was mentioned about the technicalities. In my mind, that might fall like under a pledge, as Grant would define it. That's just kind of the first thing that comes to mind, but I think there is, for sure, an element to be careful of, Matt, I think, for next.
I'm actually inclined to agree with Lauren here because of the context of what Jesus is saying. He says, tell the truth all the time. So if you say yes, if you say I promise, if you say I swear, and you are going to tell the truth all the time, what does it matter what you preface it with? The point is, tell the truth. Don't fine print your way out of something. If you say you're going to do something in a business contract, in a marriage, in a legal setting, you are going to do it, whether you're not going to look for some technicality in the letter of the law, you're not going to use the fine print at the bottom to say you had to have it in, have your forms turned in before 9 p.m. on a specific date or anything like that. You're going to be telling the truth, and you're going to let everybody know what exactly the terms are for you fulfilling your promise. So it, in terms of swearing on something that's uncertain or something that is listed here that Jesus is talking about, I'd say probably shouldn't, because you're swearing on something that's below God. And I don't want to get into question six because it's there for a reason so we can answer it. But I think there's precedent here for having these sorts of promises.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, although it's not, verbal necessarily, but the act of scriptural baptism, you're demonstrating of the vow to God.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, when you identify with this Christ's death, burial, resurrection, you're really committing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're part of what you're telling him. This is what I'm going to do. I follow Christ. Turn God to bless you and give you home in heaven.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And I think that's one of the things that makes a verbal confession so important, is the fact that it's not just you doing something with no sense of affirmation. Especially when you talk, if you want to talk legalities, one has, I think, it makes it more, that much more certain, that much more binding, when you are willing to say, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, as opposed to just saying, I want to be baptized, and then you're done. Who knows? Not that that's an issue, but per se, but without that verbal confession, that verbal entering into the understanding that you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and you intend then to obey him through the act of baptism, I think is very, very important and confirms exactly what you're saying. Anything further on this question? Okay, question number six that we've been avoiding, waiting for, and dancing around for quite some time. I guess...
Pass.
Levi?
Pass.
Bart?
Pass.
We can only do this for so long. Okay, how do we harmonize scriptures like Romans chapter 1, verse 9, 2 Corinthians 1, verse 23, Hebrews 6, verses 16 through 17, with Jesus' teaching here?
So I think it goes exactly to what has been said by Lauren and Matt and Dennis, that it's not the act of affirming something to be the truth that is sinful. It is being dishonest when you affirm something to be the truth. And God himself bound himself under an oath to himself, to Abraham, showing that oaths aren't intrinsically evil. Jesus was adjured by Caiaphas, which is, he was placing Jesus under an oath to speak the truth. Jesus didn't say, I'm not going to, oaths are evil. Instead, he answered. And then now we have Paul in these places calling upon God as his witness. And this is an oath. He's saying, I am being 100% truthful with you, my brethren, and God is my witness that I am. I stand before God at this moment and proclaim my innocence and my honesty to you, and that I have been searching for your good. And we do this. We've done this in the past. I've done this in the past when we're having a serious discussion with a brother in the church who may be out of duty or committing a sin. You can say as a Christian, when you come before that brother, brother, I had only your best interests at heart, and I stand before the Lord right now in stating this before you. God is my witness that I had no duplicitous or dishonest dealings in my heart when I made. That is the same thing Paul's doing here. It's asserting and affirming to someone that your heart is clean. clear and clean and your conscience is free. And technically, that is an oath. And so I completely agree with what has been said here, that we are not to make frivolous statements. This is something that is to be, this denominational commentary says, Jesus here is forbidding the use of oaths in common conversation as being unnecessary for truthful people. But he is not forbidding them from taking oaths at the appropriate time in truth before God. And I think that is, now, of course, we had this discussion. I've been raised all my life to, if I ever dragged into court, not to swear, put my hand on the Bible and swear. And I still don't think I could. I think I would have to say I affirm that I will tell the truth if I was forced to do that, just because of the way I've been raised. But Mike Criswell, in his commentary, asked the question, kind of getting to this point. He doesn't really come out and say it. He didn't say you can swear on the Bible. But he does say, what's the difference between saying I swear and saying I affirm? They're just two different words that get at the same point, which is you're saying I'm going to tell the truth. And so I don't have an answer for that. My conscience, I don't think, would allow me to swear legally in a court of law still. But the point is, as has been pointed out, we have scriptural examples of people taking a vow, an oath, however you want to phrase it, before God. But the point is that Paul and Jesus were 100% correct. And as Malin pointed out, don't take an oath. It's a very serious thing. Unless you are absolutely 100% on point and on compass with the Lord when you do it.
Well said. Something rolled through my mind. I find it, I guess, ironic is the term. But when you're talking about a court of law, people have you swear on the Bible, which they then turn around and don't believe has any power. Or authority whatsoever, and yet they claim that as something of authority that one is bound then to tell the truth upon. So that's just, you know, a little side note there. But I think you're absolutely correct, Matt.
We've done this with every single one since we went through verse 17. Usually it's Bart that brings it up, but how does this fulfill the Old Testament? How does this fulfill the Old Law? Well, the idea, I think, is that God's people are supposed to be honest. And we've gone through this, we've beat that dead horse tonight. But if you are fulfilling the Old Law, you are going to do two things in this instance. You are not going to bear false witness. You are not going to take the name of God in vain. And we see examples of how we can be honest. He says, have your yes be yes, your no be no. Paul, in instances, says, God is my witness that I'm telling the truth here. Paul, I assume everyone believes that Paul is not taking the Lord's name in vain there. What he's doing there is conviction. He has conviction when he writes that. And when we tell the truth, if we make some sort of oath in front of God or with God as our witness, if we are doing that with a pure heart and we are telling the truth and what we want is honesty in that situation, we are fulfilling the Old Law, because that was the whole point of all of it. God didn't say you'll make an oath so you can lie about everything else. And they missed that point. So what Jesus is saying here is, from the beginning you weren't supposed to lie. They lied to me in the garden. And then they lied to me after that. And now you're lying about everything else. So just make it easy on yourself and say yes and no when you mean it.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's very true. And another point about honesty that also ran through my mind was the fact that they were commanded not to have two sets of weights, right? When they were traveling, they weren't to have a heavy set and a light set. That way they could go this place and it looks right, but they know that it's not right. So even if it's okay with other people, perhaps, that you're not even honest, or on the outside it looks like you're being honest, it matters to God No matter what the circumstances are. Once again, a horse that we beat to death. But it's still important. And also the amount of times that we use it. I think it is, these verses are stressing the fact that this is not to be done flippantly. And it's not, honestly, to be done often. Adding to the gravity that one should have when making such a statement and confirming and affirming their word. It shouldn't be something that they just do every single day. They do with every small detail of their lives. It should be something that when it happens, when it has to be invoked, that it means something big and something important outside of just your normal honesty and saying yes and saying no in regard to your word. Trace.
Just to make sure that horse doesn't get up anymore. I'm gonna quote from James 5:12. It says, "But above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or by earth, or with any other oath, but let your yes be yes, and your no be no, lest you fall into judgment."
Dennis.
I'm just thinking with Nathaniel meets Jesus. First thing Jesus says is a true Israelite in whom there is no guile, which is deceit. In other words, he had a pure heart, he was honest, he was straightforward, never an alternative motive or secret life or anything like that. That was
right.
For us, Jesus meets us, we say, a true Christian indeed.
That's very true. That's good as far as guile. It almost opens up a whole nother section. It's still talking about honesty at its core and at its heart, but it's something that isn't noticed quite as easily, and something that perhaps we don't respect nearly as much when it comes to God finding our mouth. Obviously, Jesus never had that, never possessed it.
Yeah, real quick, I don't mean to beat a dead horse. I'm going to give you another way to look at this. And I get caught up in this with my job, and I think a lot of us, if we think about the course of our day, we get busy. And sometimes we overpromise and tell, yeah, I'll get that after lunch, and things like that happen. We think about swearing and vows and promises. Well, I mean, a promissory note, whether you're buying a car or a house, there's legal implications for that as well. But this idea of spreading yourself thin and promising people, I think we should all, I do, and you know, apologize to people sometimes when I remember that I forgot. You know, so something to think about.
Been there, done that. And it's easy to do because we don't want to disappoint people, right? But oftentimes that we don't want to disappoint people so much that we end up not being entirely honest whether or not we can actually handle what we're saying we can handle.
I've been told to under-promise and over-deliver.
And that's a good
point. I still haven't got that figured out.
It's difficult. We've got time for one more comment, if there is one. Okay.